Our next guest is Zach Webb. Zach Webb is a senior at the University of Kansas. He spends whatever time he has left after barely meeting essay deadlines, reading, watching movies, and walking his dog. He likes snacks and booze and poetry and probably you, although your odds increase exponentially the more of those three other things you happen to have on you at the moment. Welcome, Zach.
Hi.
So you're going to read poetry. You like poetry. You said that in your bio. Do you want to say anything about the poetry you're going to read?
I like to present them how they are, sort of. If I have to contextualize a poem, I'll probably do that right before the poem, but I'm just going to get started if that's okay.
That's okay.
All right. This one's called "I've Never Hit Anybody in My Life, but sometimes I get the strongest urge to punch a stranger in the face. I'll be in the aisle of a grocery store looking for dog food and cheap bologna because the stupid dog won't eat the dog food straight. He thinks he's getting people food when I mix in the bologna, even though I'd probably eat the dog food first if I had to choose. I'll be looking on the shelf for dog food and cheap bologna, and some guy will walk down the aisle, and all of a sudden, I'll think, I could punch this guy square in his stupid-looking mouth and run out the door before he realized what hit him. Instead, I grab the dog food from the shelf, snag bologna on the way out, go home, and feed my dog. Later, we'll go on a walk. I'll pretend to get mad at him for barking at other dogs, but I know exactly how he feels. All right, this next one is called "Then She Got Off at Her Stop." I've met three wise people so far. One of them was on a bus and couldn't have been older than 10. She sat next to me, asked me where I was going. I said, the library. She asked me if I liked to read. I said, kind of. She told me she was reading a book. I said, no, you're not. She said, well, not right now, but you know what I mean. I asked her if she liked it. She said it was terrible, but she was going to finish it anyway. All right, this next one is called "The Life Cycle of the Cicada Maybe Babies." The cicada sings the same song it has been singing all summer as it bashes its head against the side of the cup I'd asked for when she said she needed help. The poor bug, ugly bastard, crying out into the night, trying to find some sweet cicadette, hopefully with a nice wide tergum that can make him feel comfortable. Maybe they'd leave their husks clinging to the bark and crawl up into the trees, smoke a cigarette, fly off together or apart. Either way, nature doesn't care. But maybe she will, and if she did, maybe he'd have to give up singing for a steadier gig to feed the thousand mouths of a new brood of squirming nymphs, and maybe once in a while after he gets home from teaching exoskeleton maintenance, he'll have a few beers, the nymphs will be tucked into bed, and he'll feel confident enough to slip out of his shell again, not noticing the shell was now a pair of jeans, his back had straightened, his wings shriveled and gone. It would happen too slowly for him to realize it was happening at all, but maybe she would, and out of some sense of obligation, or just because she wants to, she would join him and caress the nubs where his wings used to be. He'd feel them vibrate and tingle underneath his doughy flesh if he's a lucky cicada. But he isn't, really. 17 years spent underground for 4 weeks of flight while trying to touch the light, just like everything else. He finds himself in the wrong house entirely, trapped between a plastic cup and a torn-off top of a 12-pack of hams bought and finished the day before, until finally the cup tilts up. The beer box top waves him off towards his brethren, still singing out into the night, a song that must be beautiful to them, but to me only sounds like screaming. All right, this next one, I was kind of into Breaking Bad like everybody else, and yeah, I'm just going to let this happen, I guess. This is called "Speech Given by Walter White's Goatee to the Cult of Goatees at the Dawn of the Goatee Town Massacre." I'm sure some of you have seen the signs. We have lost our chemistry. The looks women give us have gone from curious apprehension to disdainful amusement. The look you would give to a misbehaving child that is too small to do any real damage. They don't love us like they used to. They think we will go gently when we do. The way of the Tom Selleck, the horseshoe, the soul patch, the Fu Manchu. They're goddamn wrong. Let us not waste our time until we are forced to live as mere mustaches or chin beards or next to sideburns. No, we are not the danger, yet they are afraid of us. We rabid wolves of manhood, sitting on a face, spitting in spite at emasculation and general good taste. If we must go at all, let us leave now on our own terms, so that when they finally realize we are gone, we will have been gone for so long that they won't remember how to say our name. Take your straight razors and cut yourself. Drink of the Nair ice and Kool-Aid. Give it to your little peach fuzzies first for breakfast. Don't heed their cries. This is more painless than growing up in this world. They will meet us in the next better one where we will be free, my brothers, free from the faces of so many bar patrons, bikers, date rapists, the bros, the beats, and the baldies. Let them find another way to say, I want to look like a badass, but I don't want any scars. Let them drive their muscle cars and their motorcycles the way they will have to live the rest of their days alone with a cold mouth. All right, this next one is little bit lighter. It's called If Walls Could Talk. The kitchen would critique your cooking, the bedroom would call you dirty and tell you to do your laundry, the living room would say, get off the couch and go live for once in your life, and you'd reply, shut up, living room, I work on the computer and I watch things on TV, so what? You're just a room, you don't even know what it's like out there. But the bathroom does. What's out there gets washed off of you every day during your terrible shower renditions of Hall & Oates quote-unquote classics and desperate practice whisperings of, yeah, I'd sex that up as the pus from your zits hit in the mirror. The bathroom is the best place to record music, they say, because it repeats yourself back to you and takes away anything you can fit in its pipes. No questions asked, no answers given. Face it, home isn't where you cook, it isn't where you sleep, and it's definitely not where your heart is. Home is wherever you are most comfortable taking a dump. This one's called The Swordfish, or A Transformation in Two Stanzas. My dad and I hooked it one Sunday instead of going to church. We should have known it was trouble when we saw the top hat and the squeaky clown nose over the pointed killer tip of its real one. It offered us each a wish if we would throw it back, but when I tried, I was thinking world peace or maybe a new Lego set. My father told me we'd make way more money off a talking fish. He tried to throw it in a white bucket, but it just lounged on the top like Fat Elvis on the toilet, the will gone from its gills. My dad tried, but it never spoke to him again. He hung it above the fireplace, and once in a while, when I was alone, the beast would yell out from its mahogany perch on the mantel, make a wish and save a fish. I couldn't take it. I wished it gone from the living room forever. The next morning, I poured a bowl of some frosted flakes, and there was my father hanging on the perch above the fireplace, the swordfish in the kitchen, wearing a clean black suit, his clown nose covering his bloody sword snout, and his top hat covering his bloody sword thoughts. And all he said was, isn't it time for you to get to school, with a wink? Then he went to do weird stuff to my mom with his nose. All right, this one's Past Self Punches. When flipping through your old high school blue five-star, three-subject notebook you found forgotten in the bottom of your backpack at the back of your closet as you were moving out, behind the ignored algorithms and the doodles, after the scratched-out love notes and hurricane scribbles circling the three holes on every page, you find one with four lines you wrote the day you realized you weren't a good writer. You'll probably think this poem is stupid the next time you read it, but you're closer to dying than me, so f*** you. All right. This is his last trip to the DMV. He ticked the organ donor box without really thinking about it after standing in line for so long. The day he died, the nuns came. They took his body, flattened his teeth into keys, stretched his intestines until they were perfectly in tune, fashioned his kidneys and liver into petals, and now every mass, the fingers of one of the nuns gracefully dance over his remains as the congregation lines up to receive communion. All right. Yeah, this is the last one I'll do. It's called My Dog Is Better Than Your God. The milk bones I feed him after walks are the only reason he doesn't eat the moon like a biscuit and set Ragnarok upon us all. His top running speed is twice the speed of light. His leash is made of solid titanium, and its function isn't to keep him close. It's to keep him from creating a sonic boom that breaks all the first-story windows in the neighborhood every time he takes off after a rabbit. He once got off his leash and ran so fast he traveled back in time. He didn't kill Hitler, but he did save his dog, who now goes by Gertie and lives with my uncle in Austin, Texas. When he gets a new toy, he turns it inside out and wraps himself in its stuffing so that he may better understand that which he has destroyed. One of my ex-girlfriends was allergic. She grew a tail and broke out in hives the size of marbles. From the biggest one on her foot popped out a two-scale miniature of my hopes for the future. We broke up 2 days later. His favorite story is Cat in the Rain. He likes the part about the cat in the rain. He once caught a lightning bolt because he thought Zeus was trying to play fetch. Now his tail kinks in the middle and gives off a radio signal. If you're ever driving down the highway late at night and your radio comes across an AM station playing nothing but Three Dog Night covers from an alternate universe, you know he's close. Wherever he poops, the tree of life grows. In exactly 1 week, I've got four of them outside my downstairs bathroom. He sells its fruit on the street while I'm at work for 25 cents or 10 seconds of petting. Once he has enough money saved up, he's going to hire Sarah McLaughlin to follow me around whenever I leave the house. Sometimes I tape $10 to his back and send him to the taco stand on a skateboard. When he gets back, the money's gone and he's got sour cream and lettuce all over his snout. I haven't eaten a burrito in weeks, but my YouTube viewer count has never been higher. His bark vibrates through dimensions outside the range of normal human consciousness. The only ones that hear it are madmen and pizza delivery drivers. I only know he's barking when he starts levitating 2 feet off the floor through the sheer intensity of his attention. He can only do it when he's not thinking about it. He never brings me the paper, but he does bring me the internet. His ears are local Wi-Fi hotspots. Once he pirated the complete series of Homeward Bound, and after watching them back to back, he asked me what happened to the animal actors, and I told him they were probably dead now. Then he slept for 3 days, and when he woke up, he brought me this poem and promised to never bark at the mailman on a Sunday.
Cool. Thanks, man.
Yeah, no problem.
Is it
again? This is going to be some inside baseball, what I'm going to say to you, Tim, which is that I feel like, so we've had a lot of poets as our guests. If Danny Kane and Robert Knapp had a poetry love child, that might be Zach.
Yeah.
Do you see what I'm saying? Are you from Texas, Zach?
No, uh-uh.
You got a little.
I've lived all up and down the Midwest. My mom lives in Texas right now, actually, but uh-uh.
And the other
Southeast Kansas.
Most important question is, I feel like it's important for to understand your poems. What's your dog's name?
Easy.
Easy. Yeah. With a Z?
Oh, yeah. The spelling's sort of optional. Like, okay. You can capital E, capital Z, or just
the normal way.
Regular Easy, yeah.
Nice.
Cool.
Yep.
I've seen you perform actually at the Tap Room a lot, and uh-huh. Your poems seem especially, you do a really good job of performing them, and you read really well right now, and I love during the Tap Room when you come up, I know we're going to get a good poem. Do you write with performance in mind?
Well, yeah, half of it. I mean, that is half of it to me. Like, I know how a lot of people consume poetry is they sit down and read it, which is, that's fine. That's a classic way to do it. That's a perfectly fine way to do it. But when I'm writing a poem, I'm writing it. I'm going to have to be the one reading this thing every time. So I want to make it fun to read for myself because I'm doing it for you guys, but I'm also kind of doing it for me. I'm a little selfish that way.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna lie.
Well, I think a lot of poets are, if yeah. We tell them the truth. What do you do, like, what's your editing process or your writing process to ensure that it's fun for you when you read it out loud?
Well, I read it out loud as I write. Like, if I'm working on something, I'm not sure if I like it or not, I will sit down and read it out loud and hammer out that line until it sounds good. Or, you know, sometimes you got to throw it out as part of the process, too.
Yeah. When you read other people's work, do you read that out loud too, or are you more a silent?
Yeah, like I said, if I'm having trouble with something, I will definitely read it out loud to sort of to process it. Mm-hmm. Or if it looks like it'll just be fun to read out loud, I do that too.
As you were reading, I was thinking kind of about the way you're reading, and the metaphor that came to my mind is almost like a snowball rolling downhill, and it like picks up speed as it goes. That like you kind of start at a slower pace. And it picks up where almost, so it's like the words are almost kind of just coming at you real fast after a while. Like, I don't know, is that, are you consciously yeah. thinking about what you're doing, or is it just like, that's what you do?
Yeah, well, a little bit is like, I'm really want to keep people's attention. And so a good way to do that is sort of pick up the pace as it goes along and sort of get them engaged with you and the poem itself.
And I noticed, I was looking at the pages as you were reading them, and, you have like some short lines, but you also have what I think of as step lines. Like they almost look like stairs. Can you talk about your form?
Yeah, I mean, it really depends on the poem and what I'm trying to do with it. Like the one I think you were talking about was one of the first ones mm-hmm. I read, or it was the first one yeah. I read about wanting to punch people in the face.
Yeah,
that one I definitely wrote that one. Like I said, I enjoy reading it out loud, but if something interesting like comes to me, mm-hmm. I will definitely mess with the how it looks on the page mm-hmm. to sort of catch the eye as well as the yeah. as well as the ear, I've been also getting into I'm not really sure what they're called, but they're like
field poetics
yeah, yeah. like word pictures essentially yeah. like
That's cool.
Turning the poem into sort of an image.
So for well. The for those listening, the what That's can you
the,
say that
the poem? Swordfish.
Yeah.
The swordfish one has got a picture of like a swordfish on the line, kind of, and then a dude in a hat underneath it.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
So did you think of the content first or the image first? What's the relationship between them?
Sometimes I don't really have too many more of these on me, and I've only written like two or three of these that come out all right. Mm-hmm. I usually, like half the time, I can't make it look like I want to make it look like, so I just revert it back to a more traditional form. But if it does, if I am playing around with it and it looks, it thematically all works together. Like for the swordfish one, I totally... I wanted to make one that looked like a swordfish, and the little guy underneath sort of came from all the excess and what the poem was thematically working with too. So like the swordfish came before the poem, and then the guy came like after the poem. So it's sort of it's a back and forth process.
Nice. Have you are you just still writing individual poems, or are you working on some kind of bigger project?
Man, I've got my honors thesis in poetry coming up.
Oh, nice.
And what is that
going to
be? Is it a link
that's poem? That's actually a lot of what I read for you today is going to be in that. So.
And what do you read? Like, what poets do you like? I mean, do you get your style from someone particular who, you know, you definitely have a distinct style and it seems like you like having fun. Are there other poets that have inspired you in that regard?
Oh, man. Almost everybody I read inspires me, but I mean... it's weird. Like, I like to have fun with my poetry, but I like to read really depressing stuff, too. But also, not all the time, though, because that puts you in a weird state of mind when you just read sad stuff all the time. But I guess, like, one of my favorite poets is, like, Bukowski, obviously. But, but one of my favorite more contemporary poets is actually going to be coming to the Tap Room on this coming weekend, Sunday. Sunday, May 3rd, so it's next week. But yeah, it's Jennifer Knox. She is...
Yeah, we were talking about...
Yeah, she manages to combine, like, hilarity and, like, the form of the poem in just a way that makes you think about stuff. So there's, like... Because funny kind of works, like, by itself. It's enough to get people's attention, but there has to be something going on to, like, sort of have longevity in poetry, I think.
Yeah. How do you see humor working in your poem? I'm more curious, like... Because I know a lot of people will try to write something funny and they end up with sad stuff.
Yeah.
Do you find the opposite is true for you? You try to write sad stuff, or maybe
it really depends on the poem I'm writing. I mean, I think there is inherently a lot of sadness in funny stuff.
Yeah.
And it is sort of fun to play with that. And because it really all it is controlling the amount of funniness and sadness like in your poem that changes it from comedy to like tragedy, and I like to ride that edge sometime, I guess.
Nice.
Sometimes.
Cool,
man. Well, thanks for coming in and reading some of your stuff and talking with us, and good luck with your honors thesis.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure. Call me a dog when I'm gone.